Simone, I was talking to my dad yesterday, and I'm determined to get him to list our family home on Airbnb while my parents are away.
What does it look like?
It's really great. It's such a neighborhoody suburb with cute coffee shops and people walking around talking to each other. The streets are lined with trees, and it's close to the water. Honestly, when I go home, I get such a good night's sleep. It kind of feels like a vacation.
I love that for you, sleepy girl. It's a win-win.
Okay, Mom, Dad, are you guys listening? Your home may be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Hello, sunshine.
Hey, besties. Today on The Bright Side, we sit down with financial planner and best-selling author Alexa Von Tobel. She's on a mission to empower women to be fearless with our finances. It's Tuesday, April 23rd. I'm Simone Boyce.
I'm Danielle Rovay, and this is The Bright Side from Hello, Sunshine. Simone, what do you eat for breakfast before we get into recording? And do you eat it at home or do you eat it in the car?
I eat it at home like a normal person. I drink coffee in the car, but yeah. I eat breakfast at home. Right now, I'm really into my yogurt parfaits. I have made this berry syrup that I sprinkle on it because I use plain Greek yogurt and it tastes like your mouth is cement. You know the feeling
yes.
that I'm talking about?
Yes.
So I made this berry syrup that I put on it and granola, and it's actually delicious. So that's my
yummy.
Breakfast at the moment right now.
I always break it up with honey, but I love a syrup. That mm-hmm. sounds so good. I'm having trouble finding time for breakfast. I'm stuffing my face with like some sort of bar. Sometimes I forget, and I can hear my stomach grumble on the microphone when we're doing interviews.
That's so funny.
And I'm like, can the interviewee hear this?
We have really good microphones, y'all.
One thing we agree on is coffee. We always have our coffee.
Hell yeah. I am wired right now from this cold brew.
I have a cutoff at 11. I will not drink a sip past 11 a.m.
Oh, well, that's wonderful for you. But my life is a bit different. And I normally have a really high coffee tolerance, but this cold brew is like, I'm wired up right now. I'm electrified.
Well, you grew up partly in Miami, and every time I go to Miami, I always get Cuban coffee, and it wires me like nothing else.
It's the best. This is the thing that I miss about Miami the most.
Yeah.
I have been saying this for years. Somebody needs to open up just a little walk-up window of Cuban coffee in Los Angeles.
That someone should be you.
It should, but listen, maybe we'll kickstart it.
I like it. Should we get into the show today?
Let's do it. We're going to start with some Cher news, y'all. She is getting her flowers from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. She is officially in the class of 2024, along with Ozzy Osbourne, A Tribe Called Quest, Mary J. Blige, and so many more. I'm so happy for all of them.
I feel confused because in December, Cher said that they couldn't pay her if they gave her $1 million. She wouldn't be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And now she's being inducted, which is, I'm glad she had a change of heart because she deserves to be in there. She was such an icon.
You know, we do need some clarity around that situation. I'm glad you brought that up, Danielle, because Cher's been quiet on social media about that. But I don't know, maybe she's accepting the win now. Maybe she's taking the W.
I think another person who should be inducted is Lenny Kravitz. That to me feels overdue.
We have a big Lenny Kravitz crush on the bright side.
He's our short king forever.
Also, this is interesting. Nominated but did not make the cut, Mariah Carey.
Mimi.
That's got to happen eventually, right?
I think so. Speaking of talented musicians, the Spice Girls reunited at Victoria Beckham, aka Posh Spice's 50th birthday party over the weekend and performed the stop dance at the party.
My heart skipped a beat whenever I saw this.
Yeah, our heart stopped.
Completely. Cardiac arrest.
How many puns should we make? We always make puns. Okay, David Beckham, like the good husband that he is and the good Instagram boyfriend that he is, shared a video of it to Instagram. And then Victoria shared it on her page with the caption, hashtag spice up your life. Okay, here's the best part. All of them were there, including Mel B, who recently shared that she got kicked out of the group chat for talking about a potential reunion. Was this what she was talking about? Is this the reunion?
The reunion was at Victoria Beckham's 50th birthday party.
I'm just wondering.
Guess who else was there? Thomas Cruise.
Tom Cruise. Jump on the couch, Cruise.
Listen, he's evolved since then, okay?
Of course, he's the most incredible action hero of our
all time.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say of our time, but sure, of all time. Also true. Doesn't mean he didn't jump on a couch on Oprah however many years ago.
I'm a Tom Cruise fan.
That's because you used to do red carpets like I did. And anybody who does red carpets knows that Tom Cruise is the nicest to every reporter on a red carpet. He speaks to everybody from the front of the line to the very back. And when we started and we were in the very back of the line, we appreciated Tom Cruise.
It's so true. He looks at you. He acknowledges you, makes eye contact. But also, I am obsessed with Top Gun Maverick. Unhealthy obsession with
it. It's incredible.
I love that movie so much. I listen to the soundtrack whenever I work out. It's the best motivation. Anyways, we digress.
I don't know how this became about Tom Cruise, because this was about the Spice Girls. I used to watch that movie in my basement in Chicago before school on repeat.
I just love that they were all there. That seems like a big scheduling feat. Okay, Danielle, I saw the cutest story on the Washington Post this morning. An 11-year-old girl and her dad were fossil hunting on a beach in England when they discovered not one, but two extremely rare fossils. So Ruby Reynolds and her dad, Justin, later learned that both of those fossils were actually part of the jawbone of a new species of marine reptile. So they discovered a new animal together.
This is so special.
Isn't that cute?
My dad and I used to read books together, but we did not discover a new animal together. That is really, really cool.
I mean, this is how big their discovery was. They wrote to a local paleontologist who told reporters that he was blown away because 95% of the time when he gets calls like that, people just find rocks. But they actually found a new species.
How do you think paleontologists who have worked their whole career to find something like this feel about this daddy-daughter duo on vacation finding this?
Honestly, I would give up at that point. I would just throw my hands up. I'm done. I would just give up.
Okay, I recently saw some chatter about the perils of kindness. And it really stuck out to me because I've never thought of kindness as being perilous. I've always thought of it as a great thing. But this article says that in relationships, sometimes kindness can do more harm than good.
Because we're not being fully truthful in the name of trying to be kind to someone, we're holding back. Is that why?
Yes, that's exactly it. So there was a writer for Psychology Today that calls it the truth or care dilemma. So he says there can be tension between two competing ways to show respect for someone you care about. Basically, are you hitting someone you love with a truth bomb or are you keeping it to yourself?
But aren't we putting a false binary on this? Can't you do both? Can't you have kindness and candor at the same time?
For sure. I think part of what he's saying, too, is like you have to have tact with it. But what I'm wondering is if you switch it up depending on who you're talking to. Because I know in my friend group, there's some people that I know can handle the truth bombs and some people that probably just want it, my ear.
I think that speaks to the time that you've spent with that person, the history that you have in that relationship. And also, it speaks to the person's willingness to change. And also, I think in friendships and probably romantic relationships too, the best kind of feedback is feedback about something they can actually change. If you offer feedback about something that they cannot change about themselves, then that's, I think, where feelings get hurt.
Yeah. I think sometimes, though, feedback makes people feel not seen because they feel like you're not understanding where I'm coming from. You don't see me or my point of view on this. So I'm actually really careful about feedback. I'm more of a listener. If somebody asks me for my feedback, then I give it.
Yes.
When I was younger, I used to just dish out my feedback, like in college. I don't know why people were friends with me. I was a real truth teller. And I think through therapy, I learned that for me, it's better to sometimes you got to ask like, hey, do you want an ear or do you want to know what I think?
I think that's the best question that you can ask is, do you just want to vent right now or do you want me to prescribe something?
So I actually interviewed an expert on kindness a few years ago. His name's Houston Kraft, and he wrote a great book about it. And I said to him, I've always hated this phrase, do nice guys finish last? Because I love nice. I love kind. And he said, nice guys do finish last. Kind guys finish first. And the difference is that kindness has boundaries. Nice is just nice for the sake of it. And that's not great either.
I also think this article is speaking to a larger phenomenon in our society where we tend to catastrophize the consequences of being really candid. We always think that it's going to cause more harm than it actually does. Mm-hmm. But telling the truth in relationships can actually enhance your life. I didn't I wasn't sure about this until I came across this study where researchers asked people to be honest in every single interpersonal conversation for 3 days. And of course, the participants expected that they were going to ruin their friendships and romantic relationships with all that honesty, but they actually found that it was extremely pleasant and positive, both for their well-being and for their relationships.
I really like that, Simone.
Yeah.
It's not as bad as you think it's going to be.
Exactly.
Up next, what are 3 things to consider before taking on debt? We'll find out after the break. Simone, we've talked a lot on this show about empowering women to recognize the assets that we already have and not be afraid of a little side hustle.
This conversation, Danielle, is music to my ears.
So, you know, it got me thinking. So many women I know have an Airbnb and they don't even know it. My friend owns a beautiful apartment in one of LA's coolest neighborhoods, and it just sits there making no money while she's away.
Wait, is that true? What a missed opportunity. You guys also live in this prime celebrity-spotting neighborhood of LA.
Stars, they're literally just like us.
Okay, as an Airbnb host, do you want to hear my pitch for her?
Yeah, obviously.
Okay, first, it's just a great way to earn a little extra cash to pay for those sushi dinner dates, you know what I'm saying? And it's fun. I love knowing that families are enjoying my space while I'm away. And you are in such an incredible neighborhood. I mean, prime real estate.
Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Stephanie J. Block.
And I'm Mary Lee Fairbanks.
And we host Stages Podcast.
Binge close to 100 episodes. Hear the inside stories from backstage and behind the scenes as we go beyond the resume and into the heart of creativity and what it really takes to be in the business of show business.
Don't miss our chats with this season's Tony nominees. If you love theater and entertainment, you are going to love Stages Podcast.
Subscribe to Stages Podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts and visit us at stagespodcast.net.
We're back, Danielle. Today we're taking the veil off of a taboo subject, money. It's something that I love talking about with other women because we're often socialized not to talk about it.
That is spot on. Alexa Von Tobel is the founder of Inspired Capital and the best-selling author of Financially Fearless. I like that word fearless when it comes to money. And she's here to tell us about the importance of starting financial education at a young age. I'm talking playground, wheels on the bus, kiddie pool, Play-Doh kind of young, Simone.
See, that's when it needs to start. And Alexa's latest book is a children's book for kids called Money Matters, a guide to saving, spending, and everything in between.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say I could probably use that book as well.
I think we could all use this book.
Alexa, it's so great to have you on the bright side.
Hi, guys. Very happy to do this with you guys.
Oh, thank you. Okay, so it's Financial Literacy Month. Why is financial literacy imperative?
Financial literacy and the education piece of it matters so much to me because for every human being on this planet, money is a big part of our lifeline. It's absolutely critical. I have 3 little kids. I mean, I care about them being empowered in their wallet. Money gives you choice. Let me be clear, do not support the quest for money. We're not trying to get as much money as possible. That's a pretty miserable life, actually, to be on the quest for only money in life. Money does not equal happiness, but money gives you choices. If you're in a job that really doesn't suit you and you're miserable, money lets you change jobs and find something that lets you be happier in your life. If you're in a bad relationship and you need to leave, money allows you to have the options to leave. If you need to go and see an important doctor that isn't totally paid for by insurance, money allows you to do those things. And so for the most critical things in life, money gives you choices. And I care that more people on this planet have choices.
One of the parts of your work that I feel really drawn to is changing our habits at a young age. And you said you want financial literacy taught in elementary schools. How old are we when we start to pick up habits around money?
Sure. And so first, very important for every parent out there. There's a new study out of the University of Michigan that tells you that as young as, let's call it 5, it's 3 to 5, kids are already learning how to feel about money based on how we exhibit the tone of how we behave around money. So if every time money comes up, it's a stressful, anxious-filled, they have now proven that 15 years later, 25 years later, that child will have a less healthy relationship to money than if the tone in your household is matter of fact, can do, positive. And that doesn't mean you're always telling your child they can get what they want. I regularly tell my children, so sorry, you're not going to get that toy. But the tone matters. And so back to your point on habits, just like our kids see us wake up, brush our teeth, brush our hair, get dressed and go out the door. And through osmosis, they pick that up. We need to show our kids the same thing with money. And not only should they see us talk about money, it's no longer taboo, guys. It's 2024. Money is a part of our lives. We should be empowered in it. We should talk about it. But two, they see our habits. They see us be matter of fact in a habit around going to work. I tell my kids when I leave, mommy loves work. Mommy thinks work is awesome. I'm like, I build companies all day and it's big puzzles and complicated ones and mommy loves it. So starting and forming new associations with money that are positive. And then the second piece to your habits is I force them to take a chunk of it and put it in the bank account. Mm-hmm. It's on the kitchen counter. Everyone can see it. You want that same habit to be so deeply ingrained in them.
And making it tangible, actually forcing them to feel it, to touch it, that is so important too. Because, I mean, we all know how easy it is to spend money now. With Apple Pay, it's like, bloop, $300 gone. And you never see the money. It's just, there's nothing there.
I mean, literally, amen. Imagine you're a five-year-old living in 2024. Boxes arrive every day to my house from like a magical man and they just show up. And when you open them, often they're filled with like delicious and yummy things, snacks and gummy bears and toys and presents. And so back to your point, it's so important that we make it tangible. I do a few key things that I think are really important. Number one, my kids have allowance. They have piggy banks. I put the money in it. They see it. It's physical. It's real. As kids get a little bit older, those go into actual bank accounts. And then you pull out the statements and you show them, this is your IRA, your Roth IRA. Then I started a retirement account for my daughter who's nine. Here's what's in it. And let's watch it grow now. She's learning about compounding interest without doing anything.
Alexa, you're so successful now at this point. I mean, you're a founder, you're an author, but I'm curious, what are the narratives that formed around money for you as a kid that you had to unlearn as an adult?
One of the major reasons that I started spending more time on trying to learn about money is very unexpectedly, I lost my dad when I was 14 years old. My mom became a single mom with two older brothers. And I remember in that moment, and thank goodness we were financially stable, but my mom for the first time had to take care of the money in our household. And it struck me at 14 profoundly that I was like, I can't believe not only does she have to manage us and manage this like massive, massively big trauma in our family, she also has to go learn about money and like managing our money for the first time. And so when I went to college and I started trying to like, okay, I'm going to learn about money. And then I was like, where's the classes? And I went to Harvard and there was not a single class. And so I was really on this quest to get really good at just managing money so that it could be something that I could feel empowered for my whole life, for the rest of my life, to be on my own two feet, no matter what life threw at me. I was very fortunate. My dad was somebody who showed me my bank statements and let me watch it grow and made money feel like something I could manage. And so I had a very positive association despite having a big traumatic life event. I had the foundation of I could manage it, but then I went out there to find how to manage it and get good at it. And I couldn't find the content. So that was the huge thing that I had to really overcome. And it's also hopefully helped you understand why I'm so authentically passionate about just paying this forward to boys and girls all across the country at all ages. I want everyone to feel empowered in their wallet. And all of us feel negative about money a little bit at times because there's always someone who has more. And you have to learn that does not matter. It's about feeling in control of your life. And that's the goal with money.
That's my favorite thing that you've shared because it really is about control. I've personally felt that. You know, you've been really emphatic about writing this book for a specific audience, and it's girls. You wrote it for kids, but particularly girls. Like, why did you write this for girls in particular?
As a mother of two daughters, as someone who has been successful in business, there are still not enough women at the top. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is just not acceptable in my mind. on every level, board, CEOs, C-level suite, all of it. So mm-hmm. it's part one. And then I won't get into all of the politics of everything, but I think women's rights and our choices, the fact that we are having to work through fighting for those all over again. And I think it's really important that one girl see, I have choices. I can be strong and smart with my money. Mm-hmm. And I think that more and more women need to see role models of people that are actually at the top doing great things so that all of our little girls just know that that is absolutely within their reach.
We're taking a quick break. We'll be right back with more from Alexa Von Tobel.
Simone, we've talked a lot on this show about empowering women to recognize the assets that we already have and not be afraid of a little side hustle.
This conversation, Danielle, is music to my ears.
So, you know, it got me thinking. So many women I know have an Airbnb and they don't even know it. My friend owns a beautiful apartment in one of LA's coolest neighborhoods, and it just sits there making no money while she's away.
Wait, is that true? What a missed opportunity. You guys also live in this prime celebrity-spotting neighborhood of LA.
Stars, they're literally just like us.
Okay, as an Airbnb host, do you want to hear my pitch for her?
Yeah, obviously.
Okay, first, it's just a great way to earn a little extra cash to pay for those sushi dinner dates, you know what I'm saying? And it's fun. I love knowing that families are enjoying my space while I'm away. And you are in such an incredible neighborhood. I mean, prime real estate.
Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Every week on Talk Easy with Sam Fragoso, I invite an artist, writer, or politician to come to the table and speak from the heart. In ways I imagine you haven't heard from them before. Some of my favorites are with Tom Hanks, Margaret Atwood, Questlove, Cate Blanchett, and Oscar Isaac. If that sounds like a varied group of people, it's because it is. I always wanted to make a show where one week we could sit with a politician like Beto O'Rourke, the next an author like Min Jin Lee, or TV titans like Bill Hader and Quinta Brunson. Basically, this is a podcast driven by curiosity and an abundance of research. Conversations where people actually start to sound like people. In recent weeks, I sat with Dan Levy, Ava DuVernay, Benny Safdie, and the editor of The New Yorker, David Remnick. You can listen to Talk Easy with Sam Fragoso on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. I hope to see you there.
Welcome back. We're here with Alexa Von Tobel. Alexa, you have a chapter on investing and it includes stock market basics. Now, I can already hear the skeptic saying, wait a minute, this is too young. Like, why would we even be bringing up stocks with kids? I love that you included this because as a parent, I plan on gifting my kids stocks. And so I'd love for you to tell us what is the best way to approach investing with kids?
So first of all, it's so fun. Let me just start there. So investing is something all of us have to do. Every human listening right now, investing, you know, if you look at the last 100 years, you look at, you take the S&P 500 and you just take a long point of view, take a whole 100 year view. On average, it's been about 10% growth year over year on average. Everyone listening, we have to invest in our retirement accounts. That's what the purpose of a retirement account is. So investing is the most important thing we all have to do in our wallet to have enough money. It's critical. So because it's so important, I'm like, of course you should teach a child to understand it. And what is investing? Investing is looking around in normal life. When you see a product that you're using all the time, thinking to yourself, huh, who makes that company? Is that a company that I could buy a share of? And the way I explain it to my kids is it's okay to actually be really smart and lazy in your wallet. And what that means is I want my money working for me when I am sleeping, when I'm on vacation, when I am doing absolutely nothing. And that's what investing is all of the people at that company, when they go to work, they are going to work for you and your dollars because you're a shareholder. And I think it's just a very important way to teach kids to understand investing. And that does not mean stock picking, to be clear. I'm not trying to teach your kid to go and pick a single stock. You want them to buy ETFs and index funds of baskets. But the point is, what goes in those baskets of an index fund is 500 companies, and helping them understand what a stock is, plain and simple, And let's say your kid ate some cereal this morning, General Mills, it's a company. And you could buy a share of that company if it's breakfast that you eat every day. Just helping them make it relate. They know what Coca-Cola is. They know what Hershey is. Helping them just understand those basics is so important.
Hearing you talk about investing, I think we've been approaching it all wrong. I think we should have always done it from a children's point of view because it just makes it so much easier to digest. Like it took me years as an adult to feel comfortable with understanding the stock market and how it works. But I'm sure a lot of people are listening to this wishing that they had your book when they were kids, but unfortunately we did not. So what are your top three tips for becoming financially literate now?
So I'm going to start with tip number one, which is really important, which is rip the Band-Aid off and throw the shame away. Every single one of us feels a little ashamed about money in some way. Every one of us does. And I think that that's sort of really step one to being really empowered in your money is to say, of course I made some mistakes. Of course I got something wrong. Guys, I'm sitting here. The number of mistakes I've made, it's laughable. I was applying for credit cards and they were like, girl, you don't have a job. What are you talking about? Like missed bills because I just didn't even know where I was supposed to pay it online. Rip the Band-Aid off. Like forgive yourself. After you forgive yourself and throw the shame away, figure out how to get empowered around your wallet. Sit down and decide to make a plan and say, this year, 2024, I'm going to change my life around my wallet. And the third is set some goals and maybe even set some goals with an expert. So go find, I'm a certified financial planner, which is a doctor of money, CFP. Find yourself somebody that could work with you. And even when you don't have a ton of money, there's so many digital companies out there now online where you can go find a place where you can start to have a healthy relationship with money. And part of that will look like, and this is my like point three sub bullet point. I want you to do three things. I want everyone listening to do three things. The first thing is I want you to have an emergency savings account. If you're really young, that should be about 3 months. If you're older, it should be more like 6 to 9 months. Number two, everyone needs to pay off your credit card debt in full, get it to zero. That may take you a few years if you have a lot. If you have very little, rip the Band-Aid off, pay it off now. Don't go out for the next 3 months. Do whatever you got to do, get it to zero. And then the third is everyone needs to start a retirement account. Every single person, as early as you can in your 20s, should start contributing something to your retirement because compounding interest is not magic, it's math. And if you start saving a bit, it will grow. Those are your three goals I just gave them to you.
Fantastic. I like those. Didn't Einstein talk about compound interest?
I mean, it's like the most beautiful thing is watching money compound.
Yes, I agree. Alexa, thank you so much.
Thank you, Alexa.
You guys are amazing. Thanks so much for having me. What an honor.
Alexa Von Tobel is the founder of Inspired Capital, a financial journalist, and the author of the new children's book, Money Matters, a guide to saving, spending, and everything in between.
Danielle, I'm going to be honest. When I heard there's a money book for kids, I was like, huh, that's interesting. But after talking to Alexa, it's so important. It makes so much sense. I think every home should have one of these books.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think we both had that same sentiment. I feel like I need the book. I mean, just a few years ago, I finally told myself I was going to stop being, quote, bad with money. And I felt out of control. And Alexa mentioned that a lot about money is control. And I went through all my credit cards. I went through process. Like I did a whole deep dive. And I actually do feel in control with money now. And it doesn't feel good to not understand something so crucial to your life and well-being. And I think that a book like this is going to help kids not even form any of those limiting beliefs. They'll just grow up understanding.
You know, it's Financial Literacy Month, and I want all of us to be financially literate. But I like Alexa's approach because she's going to the root cause of the problem. She's going to the source and trying to catch kids when they're still really malleable and can learn good money habits. So I was really convicted when she talked about the studies that show that as early as 3 to 5 years old is when kids are forming attitudes around money. I mean, I have two kids that are in that range. And so I'm thinking about, okay, how am I discussing money in my home? What are my emotions around money now? And what can I be teaching my kids about money at this age?
Do you think that you've been a positive influence so far, or are you changing things?
I've either been a neutral influence or a negative one. I don't know that they're old enough to pick up on, you know, discussions about money when my husband and I are feeling stressed about it. I don't know that they're old enough to do that, but I'm definitely going to be way more mindful about how we talk about money in the house and also how I frame work for me and how I frame it as something that's life-affirming and that it gives me purpose.
I liked when she said that. What did she say? Mommy's going to work and mommy loves work.
Mommy loves puzzles. She's going to go solve a bunch of really big puzzles.
Yeah, it was so affirming. Well, the good news is Alexa talked about forgiveness. So tomorrow is a new day. If you feel out of control or stressed about money, you can decide tomorrow to change that. Forgive yourself.
All right, besties, speaking of tomorrow, we are in for a treat. With entrepreneur, James Beard Award winner, and the brains behind Jenny's Splendid Ice Creams, Jenny Britton.
And that's it for today's show. Listen and follow The Bright Side on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Simone Boyce. You can find me at Simone Boyce on Instagram and TikTok.
And I'm Danielle Robay on Instagram and TikTok. Hit me up.
See you tomorrow, folks. Keep looking on the bright side. Okay, Brightside besties, you've heard me talk about it for weeks. My family and I are going to Miami. And while we're away, I'm hosting my house on Airbnb.
That's going to be such an amazing trip. You have to rent a boat for sunset while you're there, especially since you're going to get a little extra cash from your hosting gig.
100%. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Stephanie J. Block.
And I'm Mary Lee Fairbanks.
And we host Stages Podcast.
Binge close to 100 episodes. Hear the inside stories from backstage and behind the scenes as we go beyond the resume and into the heart of creativity and what it really takes to be in the business of show business.
Don't miss our chats with this season's Tony nominees. If you love theater and entertainment, you are going to love Stages Podcast.
Subscribe to Stages Podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts and visit us at stagespodcast.net.